Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, March 21st. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt Soups okay additional cannabis permit revocations. Two Spirit Awareness Extravaganza brings celebration and culture to Old Town Eureka. And the KMUD News Sports Report. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. A second batch of Humboldt County cannabis permit revocations has been approved by the Board of Supervisors, which has also approved indoor cannabis for Redway's Evergreen Business Park. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors continues to take action on unpaid cannabis excise taxes, approving a second batch of permit revocations. 15 cannabis cultivation permits were revoked by supervisors at their March 18th meeting, following the 21 revocations approved the prior week. The revocations stem from unpaid Measure S cannabis taxes, with the total debt amounting to $14 million as of October 2023, when the board directed staff to pursue payments. Farmers had until March 31st, 2024, to enter into back tax payment plans with the county and have until the end of this month to fully pay debts. The revocations apply to permit holders who haven't entered into payment plans, and the debts include unpaid planning department fees. Planning Director John Ford explained further actions that will follow the revocations.
So what will be the next stage is we will notify the permit holders and or property owners at this point that there is no longer a permit on file. So the cannabis-related infrastructure needs to be removed. It can be retained if it serves a permitted use on the property. But the large greenhouses, the large amounts of irrigation tubing and things like that will largely need to go.
Ford added that prior to revocations, permits are suspended and debtors have a chance to make payment arrangements. But he said, quote, in these particular cases, the permit holders have not really pushed to see this resolved. During a public comment period, cannabis farmer Craig Johnson said the revocations show that conditions have changed as expected and Measure S needs to be reformed.
To say that we haven't been jumping up and down saying Measure S isn't working and notifying the board, sharing year after year after year that this is really going to come to a final stop point and a cliff, and here we are. So please, you know, we were expressing over the years that this was going to be happening and that we needed a different plan with Measure S. And we're overburdened with fees and taxes in all different directions. So our farm does not owe any taxes. We are current, but my heart goes out to those that do and that are having their reality right outside their home change forever.
Supervisors unanimously approved the revocations. Also at the meeting, supervisors approved allowing indoor cannabis cultivation on 7 parcels of the Evergreen Business Park in Redway. The allowance is applied through what's known as a Q-combining zone, which sets specific standards for targeted areas. Supervisor Mike Wilson asked why the county's only Q-zone is for the Redway Business Park and not others. The only other business park in the county is adjacent to the airport in McKinleyville, and Ford said that owner isn't interested in cannabis. He added that the Redway Q Zone has performance standards that respond to community concerns.
Part of good land use practice, good zoning practice, is to listen to the concerns of the community. So we had 2 sets of concerns. McKinleyville, don't want it.
Right.
Redway, we can tolerate it, but you got to address the water, you got to address the power. And if you do those things, we're in agreement. Mm-hmm. So what this Q zone does, even though it's limiting, I get that from your perspective, is taking and looking at what the community has articulated as their concerns and incorporated that into an action for the board to consider.
Okay.
So that you're taking into account the concerns of the community.
Board Chair and Southern Humboldt Supervisor Michelle Bushnell said SOHUM is, quote, in a downward trend in people and opportunities, and I feel this is a good improvement to that business park, which is largely empty right now. The Q Zone and its indoor cannabis allowance was unanimously approved. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
From March 13th to March 16th, the Carson Building in Old Town Eureka came alive with events honoring two-spirit individuals, fostering community engagement and cultural appreciation. Naralee Devaney brings you the details.
On Friday, March 14th, Queer Humboldt, the Dalek Youth Program, and the Northern California Indian Development Council hosted the Two-Spirit Awareness and Celebration Extravaganza at the Carson Building in Old Town Eureka. The event intended to celebrate and raise awareness about our Two-Spirit community members and hosted keynote speakers Harlan Pruden, who is First Nation Cree and Two-Spirit, Ryan Stillwagon of European descent, and 2024's Miss International Two-Spirit, Ayoka Youngdeer of the Cherokee Nation. March 20th is observed as Two-Spirit Appreciation Day. Last year, Humboldt County was the first government entity to recognize this day, quickly followed by the cities of Eureka and Arcata, and since has spread to cities nationwide. The keynote speakers recognized the hard work of Indigenous communities locally, which have pushed this movement forward. Speaker Harlan Pruden began by defining the concept of Two-Spirit, which is often misunderstood in non-Indigenous spaces. They first defined Two-Spirit as a community organizing tool, not an identity, which makes it different from identities under the LGBTQIA+ umbrella, and only really makes sense when contextualized with Indigenous framework and community. Unfortunately, the acoustics in the room did not translate well on my recordings, so I will be speaking over their voices to ensure their messages are heard clear by KMUD listeners. This is Harlan Pruden.
So the first concept is that
Two-Spirit is a community organizing tool or strategy and not an identity. Implicit with identity is endpoint, where for Two Spirits, it is a way to identify those individuals who are Indigenous to Turtle Island and are gender or sexually diverse. But then it becomes a nation-specific kind of conversation. Two-Spirit is going to mean something different depending on what nation you are, your role, and how you show up in the world, about your gender and your gender identity and gender expression. Also, within a pre-contact setting, in a traditional setting, it is a gender analysis. And what your gender is a socially defined role within our societies. So there are some nations that only had two genders. There's very, very few. And those that said there were two, we have found later, through 30 years of people's work, it's like, no, they have more genders. So that's also the impact of colonization. But there's this hiding as well, as this erasure of us as Two-Spirit people. Again, the Mohawk folks, when I was living in New York, and the people would swear that they did not have a Two-Spirit tradition within the Mohawk community. But they do. They've also experienced hundreds more years of colonization than we over here in the West Coast. It was a gender analysis, so some nations only had two, some nations had three, while other nations had four. Some nations had 12 different genders. And we were working out non-binary before the concept of non-binary. When you have a society or a nation that has 12 different genders, how do we work that out? We'll talk a little bit about that. However, the work of Two-Spirit organizations, community leaders, elders, you all in this room showing up tonight, is more akin to this traditional understanding of who we were within a pre-contact setting, and what is the application and the relevancy of those teachings and knowledge for today's people. Harlan Pruden went on to highlight the importance of language and how it has changed since colonization. Pre-contact, each tribe had different terms to describe Two-Spirit people in their unique languages. From 1492 until 1989, colonizers used the derogatory term Berdash to describe any Indigenous person that didn't fit into the European gender binary. In 1990, the term two-spirit was coined.
1990 is when Myra Larry.
So in 1990 is when Myra Larry had a dream, and she then shared this dream around two-spirit. And at this gathering, it was an international gathering. There were so many nations. There were people from the Cree Nation, from the Dene Nation. They all came together, and they were like, how do we organize? And so the community landed on the term within this pan-Indian perspective of community organizing around two-spirit. They wanted a term that reflected around the combination of both masculinity and femininity, which attributed to males in feminine roles and gender, and females in masculine roles. And there you also get this pivot away from sexual orientation. And it was a pivot to your role within society by each gender. So that was built into it. But what was incredibly more important, and I think it also speaks to what we are doing today, it was this powerful political statement, because it was sovereignty of land and sovereignty of body. The community said, hey, you French missionaries, hey, you members who are studying us and calling us Berdash, what gives you that right, the name and power to name for us, to self-constitute, of like, no, 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 you have no right to name us. We choose two-spirit. Pruden later said, quote, where there is a word, there are people. In the local Wiat language, the term gomel, spelled G-O-U apostrophe M-E-L, means both together, and is used to express two-spirit people within the Wiat community. You can find more information on Wiat traditions around two-spirit people on their website, wiat.us. Pruden went on to describe the many roles that two-spirit people could take on in community. While they emphasize that this differs widely between tribes, some roles for two-spirit people included doctors or medicine people, joining war parties, peacemakers, holy people, social workers, matchmakers, and mediators. Pruden explained how this mediator role looked in their own Cree culture.
And so we could float back and forth.
And so we could float back and forth and mediate on a cultural level of bringing balance and harmony amongst two camps. Just as Andy was saying, it's that between space that we effortlessly held, that space in between and connectors as mediators. So beautiful. If I were Sue, there wouldn't be a social expectation that I would be a mediator, but there would be a social expectation that I'd be the officiant of a naming ceremony. My good friend Del First has resurrected this ceremony. Many of the traditional Sioux folks, when they are blessed with a child, they will leave the hospital and go sit with Del. Del will meet the child and then send them home. The family prepares for ceremony, and when Del has done what Del was asked to do, the family will be called back and the names are given to the child. So the takeaway from this is that two-spirit is going to mean something different if you're Cree, Sioux, Dene, Navajo, Ojibwe, because your rules are going to be different. And that's why there is no one unifying thing of all two-spirit people did this, except for that we effortlessly held that space between space as the connectors. And then, you know, for us Crees, is that we also were the connectors between the seen world and the unseen world. And so we were also the connectors between the spiritual religions. Some of us, right? And so again, what I'm taking away is that there is no one way of being two-spirit. But for a Cree perspective, there is one way of being two-spirit. That's the identity. That's the work. And that's where the cultural revitalization happens. Unfortunately, keynote speaker Miss International Two-Spirit Ayoka Youngdeer was unable to complete their travels to the event, but instead they recorded a message for us. Here is a snippet from that recording.
After many years of struggling, after many years of being ostracized by most, not all, of our traditional communities, things are changing for me. When I was able to go and participate in this pageant, and I was able to bring back this crown to my reservation, to our people, one of the first things I did was take it and present it to our chief. And he was fully supportive. Something I never in a million years felt would come to pass. And here we are. I know a lot of what's going on in the world may dishearten me. And it's scary. The way we'll get through this is together. Remaining true to yourself, remaining true to your work, sticking together. These are the things that are going to get us through the trying times. There were many times I wanted to give up because it was so hard. So hard. Just to exist in this world. And I'm so glad I did it. I'm so glad that I'm still here, because ever since I won, I've had many people in the community, people who remain in the shadows because they don't want to be othered. They don't want to be treated ugly. They stay in their community, their small communities here on the reservation, and they don't come out. They want to come out now. They want to be seen. And it's all thanks to the faith that those judges had in me at that pageant. There are many of us, when they contacted me, a lot of them have been contacting me lately, and they talked to me about how lonely they've been, and how seeing me and seeing how the tribe has celebrated me since coming home with the title, it's really made a difference in their lives. And that's the work I hope to continue on, and the work that I know many of you are working on as well. And please, no matter how hard it gets, no matter how terrifying it might seem, the work we're doing is worth it. It's worth all the negativity. It's worth all, because those good things that are happening are going to far outshine them. So I just wanted to say I appreciate all of you. Please continue the good work. And I'm glad that you have Harlan there, and he's going to be speaking with you. We go way back. And I wanted to thank you for your time.
Prudence says this work, the work to uplift, celebrate, and advocate for the Two-Spirit community, is deep decolonizing work, that which centers one's indigeneity and calls Two-Spirit people home, and is thereby a mending of the sacred hoop. Anyone interested in learning more and supporting our community's Two-Spirit members are encouraged to get involved with the North Coast Two-Spirit program, which is a program of Queer Humboldt. You can find info on this program at queerhumboldt.org or by emailing nc2sp@queerhumboldt.org. For KMUD News, this is Naralee Devaney.
The Redwood Coast Tsunami Working Group has organized several events surrounding this next Wednesday's tsunami drill.
This is Tsunami Awareness Week, and at 11 a.m. on Wednesday, March 26th, the Humboldt County Office of Emergency Services will lead the annual North Coast Tsunami Drill. This exercise, involving residents across Humboldt, Del Norte, and Mendocino counties, gives individuals, businesses, and organizations an opportunity to practice earthquake and tsunami preparedness. At the Arcata City Council meeting this past Wednesday, the council called attention to the fact it is Tsunami Awareness Week. Councilmember Sarah Schaefer read their proclamation.
Whereas California's long coastline, its proximity to earthquake faults, and its location on the Pacific Ring of Fire make it vulnerable to tsunamis. Whereas a tsunami warning was declared for Humboldt County 5 minutes after the December 5th, 2024, 7.0 earthquake, causing a mixed response with many overreacting and causing massive traffic jams. And whereas tsunamis caused by underwater landslides as well as offshore earthquakes can occur at any time and with little warning. And whereas education, awareness, and communication are fundamental to saving lives, now therefore be it proclaimed that the City Council of the City of Arcata hereby recognize the week of March 22nd through 30th, 2025 as Tsunami Preparedness Week.
And Council Member Kimberly White, who is also part of the Redwood Coast Tsunami Working Group, announced activities they have organized.
There are many ways to get involved in the Tsunami Preparedness Week. Our local Redwood Coast Tsunami Working Group has a plethora of activities. So on Monday, March 24th, Lori Dangler will be presenting what happened on December 25th at the Natural History Museum at 5:30. And then next Wednesday, March 26th at 11 a.m., there is going to be a North Coast tsunami drill. The Office of Emergency Services will issue test alerts encouraging the public to practice their earthquake and tsunami plans. So if you are in the tsunami zone, practice your evacuation plan by walking out of the tsunami zone. Or if you are not in the tsunami zone, stay put. You do not need to evacuate. However, take time to think about what you would do after a damaging earthquake. Remember that dangerous tsunami waves can last a long time, up to 24 to 48 hours after the first wave. In a real event, do not enter the tsunami hazard area until you have received notice that it is safe to do so. The week will culminate on Saturday, March 29th with the Tsunami Preparedness Workshop from 11 to 2 at the Manila Community Center on 1611 Peninsula Drive.
If you live, work, or visit the coast, you can sign up for the drill to be sure you get the alerts on Wednesday at 11 a.m. The easiest way is to search North Coast Tsunami Drill. Tsunami is T-S-U-N-A-M-I. Click on the Humboldt County announcement where you will find information and links. During the drill, or any time you feel earthquake shaking that lasts 30 seconds or longer, if you are in a tsunami zone, walk to higher ground or move outside the hazard area. If you are not in a tsunami zone, there is no need to evacuate. Just stay where you are. Instead, take a moment to think about how you would respond if an earthquake occurred and caused significant damage.
Thanks to KMUD's Kelly Lincoln for this important reminder. Turning to sports, Ray Hamill brings us details of all of this week's big local sports stories, including how the weather is affecting the HGNL high school baseball and softball seasons.
The unpredictable spring weather here on the North Coast is predictably having a major impact on local sports as the HDNL baseball and softball teams scramble to get in some valuable game time before conference play begins early next month. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on that story and updates on several local teams in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including some coaching changes at College of the Redwoods, why it's been a big month for one middle school basketball team, where two HDNL seniors are taking their talents after graduation later this year, and how former Eureka Logger and two-time Big Five MVP Caitlin Jaconi fared at last weekend's state championship women's basketball tournament. But first up, as usual, the spring weather here on the North Coast is causing problems for the local high school baseball and softball teams, with many of them scrambling to get in games before league play begins. Just about every local team has been affected, perhaps none more so than the Ferndale High baseball team. After their first five games of the season were all cancelled, the defending Little Four and North Coast Section Division 6 champions finally began their season on Tuesday. And it was a good start to the new campaign for head coach Justin Anderson and his players, who travelled to Willits and won a high-scoring game 15-8. Prescott Langer led the way at the plate in the win and was 3-for-4 with a double and an RBI, while 2024 Little Four MVP Parker Pryor and Tanner Pidgeon each added two base hits for Ferndale. Perhaps the story of the year so far in local baseball, apart from the weather that is, has been the play of the Hoopa Warriors. After not beating a Big Five team in the past 14 years, the Warriors have hit the ground running this spring with two victories over Big Five schools in their opening three games. On Tuesday, new head coach Aaron Williams and his players edged Del Norte 5-4 in their home opener, improving to 2-1 on the young season. The Warriors also split an early season doubleheader at Fortuna. Del Norte dropped to 1-4 with the loss. Other local teams who have impressed early in the new season include the defending Big Five champion McKinleyville Panthers and the Arcata Tigers. The Panthers won their opening five games and come into this weekend with a record of 5-0, while the Arcata boys are 4-1 after a pair of wins last weekend. After a scheduled trip to play at the Fort Bragg tournament was cancelled because of the weather, the Tigers faced off against Fortuna and St. Bernard's at the Bear River Casino Resort All-Weather Field, and they won both of their games, defeating the Huskies 16-1 and getting the better of the Crusaders 5-1. St. Bernard's also played Fortuna and won 6-2, and the Crusaders are now 1-1, while the Huskies are now 1-4. In local high school softball, meanwhile, the Fortuna girls have impressed early in the new season, and they improved to 5-1 with a 13-1 win over St. Bernard's on Monday. The Huskies, who are expected to be one of the frontrunners in this year's Big Five, also won two of three games at the weekend Cloverdale tournament. The defending Big Five champion Del Norte girls also got their season underway with a doubleheader at Petaluma on Saturday, beating Petaluma 4-2 and Ukiah 11-6. The Warriors feature an experienced senior heavy lineup this spring and will be the favourites to win a third straight conference championship when the Big Five gets underway early next month. The McKinleyville girls, who are 3-0 on the season, also are expected to be in the mix in this year's Big Five. Elsewhere in local sports this week, on Wednesday, College of the Redwoods announced some coaching changes ahead of the 2025-26 school year. Macy Thomas will take over the volleyball team from Kayla Costello, while Juan Perez will take over the Corsairs women's soccer team from Taylor McMillan. Thomas joined CR after spending time as a player and graduate assistant coach at Cal Poly Humboldt. As a player, she was known as a defensive specialist, and she was a team captain for the Lumberjacks in 2022. Perez, meanwhile, steps into a head coaching role after serving as an assistant coach with the CR men's soccer team. He also played for Cal Poly Humboldt and brings a strong background in competitive soccer, having played at the semi-pro level in the Bay Area. In local youth sports, it was a good month for the Fortuna Middle School 8th grade boys basketball team, which recently placed first at the Crescent City JC's tournament in the A1 division. Head coach Kyle Crawford and his players won all three of their tournament games, including a hard-fought 40-37 win over Rio Dell in the championship game. And they succeeded with just 8 players on the roster after 2 season-ending injuries to players earlier in the season. According to Crawford, the young boys showed a lot of resiliency, winning all 3 tournament games by narrow margins, but finding a way to win all 3 when they could have gone either way. 2 local high school seniors, meanwhile, recently announced where they will be taking their talents after graduation this year. Eureka's Paige Rogers announced that she will play soccer at Butte College. Rogers will go down as one of the most successful players in HDNL history after helping to lead the Eureka girls to 4 straight North Coast Section Championships and 3 straight league titles. McKinleyville senior Big Joe Gatlin also announced where he will play in college this week. Gatlin, who was an all-league honourable mention lineman in the Little Four this past fall, will play football at Mount Mercy University in Iowa. Mount Mercy is a Division I NAIA program that will compete in football for the first time in the fall of 2026. And finally this week, 2-time Big Five MVP Caitlin Jaconi capped a memorable debut season on the college basketball courts this past weekend by reaching the state semifinals with the College of the Sequoias women's team. Jaconi and the Giants closed out the season with a 57-50 loss to eventual state champion Mount San Antonio on Saturday night. Jaconi had a double-double in Friday's 77-71 win over Palomar in the tournament quarterfinals. quarterfinals, scoring 15 points and pulling down 15 rebounds. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, and thanks to our reporters, Neralee Devaney, Daniel Mintz, Kelly Lincoln, and Ray Hamill. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.